I'm Don Hudson, and this is an Eastern Wyoming College Bicentennial Project oral history interview. The date is November 14, 1975. I'm visiting this evening with Mr. Bill Likens, who lives about 7.5 miles south or west and south, slightly south of the town of Yoder. Bill Likens was an early resident in this area, coming here in 1915.
When we first come here,
Bill, would you give me your full name, please?
Bill Likens, Langston Likens.
Bill, when were you born?
1893.
And whereabouts, Bill?
In Missouri, in a place they called Harris Springs. It was kind of a resort outfit.
Where would that be close to?
That's closest to Halltown.
Well, Bill, you mentioned here you came in here in 1915, but you came from Montana.
Yeah.
Could you kind of explain a little bit of the background there? How do you happen to get to Montana and from Montana to...
Well, I went with my sister and her husband out there. He got a homestead right away, and he went home. I just stayed out there and worked, see. And then the folks told me about this land here and wanted me to come back and homestead. Then I got out here, and actually, I'll tell you the truth, I went over to Frank Hughes's place up there. And the old man Platt was the guy that was locating us. I told him, I said, I don't like to homestead 160 over here. I said, I'd like to have 320. So knowing he was too young to homestead. So in 16, why he was old enough, and I was too. So we went over here to Red Bill, and opened that land in there, and we both got a half section.
Well, Bill, how many were in your family then, back in Missouri?
Oh, well, my dad and mother came out here. Dad was 70 years old. Mother was older. And two sisters and... they were both old maids, see. So that fellow owned the lawn, and we had to take care of the whole outfit.
What possessed your dad to come out here at the age of 70?
Well, but what always tickled him so well was we noticed out here one time he was sitting out there, and we had some barbed wire we had bought. And went out there, and he was... got that wire, and there was boards around it, and he's figuring up when he was left down there, he had 40 acres. He was seeing how many 40s we had, see. He was counting.
Well, in other words, your dad came out here with the family, and then he wrote to you up in Montana.
Yeah.
And got you to come down.
Yeah, it was my brother that wrote, wanted me to come back.
Well, you were a pretty young man then at that time, weren't you?
Oh, yeah. I was 21.
Now,
but Lauren wasn't.
When you came down, did you file immediately for a homestead bill?
No. I went over to look at that place Frank Hughes homesteaded.
Whereabouts is that?
Right where Frank lives there.
Presently, and that's near Hawk Springs, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Well, when you came down here then, what made you decide to try to file for a homestead and see if you could do a little farming, I suppose?
Yeah. Well, what we had in mind, maybe, that we homesteaded up this land we had all up here. Both the girls, they filed on a half section, and Lauren and I, and Dad, he had filed on this quarter here. My brother-in-law had took it to start with. Then he released it back to the government, went over and filed on 320 where Lauren's place is. Then he quit and went back to Missouri. Then Lauren bought that land there off the Federal Land Bank.
Well, Bill, being a Missouri boy, so to speak, What do you recall that your thoughts were when you saw this country out here, in contrast to Missouri?
Oh, it looked a lot better to us. One thing, we didn't have to cut the sprouts off of it and clean the timber off. Another, it don't have the rocks like they have back there. You know, that land back there, it's rocky.
Well, now, the present farm that you have here, was this your homestead, Bill?
No, this dad took this.
Your dad had this.
Yeah.
Whereabouts now?
Then my other sister, she took this right here, where this, you come up here, a mile down there. She took that and the other and took across here. And a mile there. Two half sections of hers are in different sections, see.
Bill, do you recall the process that you had to go through in filing on the land and proving up? Do you recall any of that?
Yeah, we were supposed to put a shack on them and live on them and drill wells and break up. I believe it was 20 acres of ground.
Did most people do that then?
Yeah, most of them did. Some of them I don't think ever did. But.
Did they have a land office in Torrington, or where did you go to?
Cheyenne.
How did you go to Cheyenne?
Yeah.
Well, how long then did you have to live?
3 years.
Did a lot of people leave before their time was up, Bill? A lot of neighbors?
No. Most of them, but I knew in here, all of them filed on their land. And they got the deed to it. Well, then that depression come there, you know, and my God, you couldn't raise anything. I think Lauren and I, one time we had our wheat made less than 5 bushel.
Were those your toughest years?
Yeah.
In farming, in the depressions?
You bet.
What years? Were those in the early 30s, Bill,
yeah,
or the mid-30s?
It was the early 30s.
Was it the fact that it was so dry and you couldn't raise anything, or were there other problems?
Well, we couldn't, the stuff wasn't worth anything, and then we couldn't raise anything. Well, you know, back in Missouri, where we come from, it got so dry back there they couldn't raise anything.
How dry was it out here, Bill, when we talk about drought in the early 30s?
Well, you couldn't get your wheat up in the spring or fall either one.
It just didn't come up at all.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, how did you eat? How did you get by from one year to the next?
Working for wages.
Did most of the homesteaders or most of the farmers go out and work then during the depression?
Yeah, a lot of them did.
What did you find yourself working at, Bill?
Oh, I worked ranches. I worked for Ed Deering a lot, Lawn Merchant, and those guys over in the spring over, I used to stock their hay all the time. Fellow Fred Mason come out with us, and he used to lease that where Yoder's at there now. He always wanted me to come over and stack his hay. Then we, Lauren and I, went to sugar factory in Scott's Bluff. Worked 3 or 4 years down there. And finally, our sisters went down with us. My oldest sister, no, it was my youngest sister, she worked for Grandma Johnson down there. She run a boarding house for those sugar trains. And my other sister, she stopped there in Mitchell and worked at the hotel there.
Bill, with so many farmers out looking for winter work, was it a problem finding a job in the 30s?
Yeah, but it got you didn't get any money, you know. You know, Lauren and I worked 4 years down there at that sugar factory at Scott's Bluff for 21 cents an hour, 12 hours a day, and 7 days a week. But Lauren and I could go down there and work and save our money, and we wouldn't spend any money at all. And we'd get in and down there, we'd have just about enough to buy a cow. Cows are cheap, you know. And I know the first cow I bought off the old man Rittner up here, and I think I gave him $50. She didn't look too good.
Bill, when you came down from Montana, how'd you come down? Did you...
Train, on the train.
Well, how did you happen then? Was it in 1915 that you took out a homestead, or was it a little bit later then? I think you said you came...
It was a year later.
It was a year later. Mm-hmm. Now, the shack that you put up, you said you had to put up a homestead shack. Do you remember what your shack was like and how you built it?
Yeah, I tell you. We built them out of 1x12s, just plain old lumber. And Mother, she plastered the insides with paper to keep the wind coming in. And I'll tell you the truth. So I had two sisters, Brother and I, and Dad and Mother here. And all the houses we had, the first year or so we was out here, I wouldn't even put my chickens down in that kind of house.
How big was it, Bill?
Oh, I think they were about 10x12, something like that.
One room or two?
Yeah, one room. Then we finally built a house down there in the flat.
Well, how long did you live in your homestead shack before you build another one?
Oh, about a year, a little better.
Is that most? Did most homesteaders live about a year and then
rebuild? Yeah.
I suppose it must have been kind of hectic and a little bit cold in the winter living in that homestead shack, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. We'd go up the canyon up at Lone Creek Canyon. Dig a lot of wood out there and bring it home.
You know, I've heard other homesteaders around the area talk about getting wood from the canyon. Did that pretty well deplete the wood along the rim?
Yeah.
In fact, did you notice after a few years that there was hardly any wood, or did it?
Yeah, there was no trees that were cutting up there.
What about your neighbors, Bill, when you first homesteaded out here? Did you have very many people around you?
Yeah, there's somebody on every one of these homesteads. See, the what we called a Minnesota corner was up here, at that corner up there. Babbitt's where they live there. That is Gro Husky's homestead. And right on just west of that, that was Shire's. Not Shire, but Tyson's place, his brother-in-law. And then Shire on the first place just west of Gene House. Then Martinison was the next place up there. Then Peterson was across the other side. All them guys come in from Minnesota.
About when was the earliest they started coming into here, Bill? Were you one of the earliest, or were there a few few earlier ones?
Yeah, there was some west of us.
What community did you call yourselves? Were you Yoder at that time, or?
No, we didn't call it. We just have. It's called us Wrinkle Bellies.
Now, you mentioned Red Bill, Bill. Whereabouts and what was Red Bill?
Well, did you ever notice those hills as you went from Yoder west there?
Yes, there were a couple small rises.
Yeah, Atlanta's Red Bills.
And was there a post office there, Bill?
Yeah, at one time there was.
Was
and
it
a store,
a general store?
Yeah, and the guy had a blacksmith there, and they had a garage.
Well,
George David run the store.
George David.
Yeah.
When did that finally then end, Red Bill? Was it before 1920?
When Yoder built.
When Yoder built.
Was that about 21 or something like that?
Yeah, about 20. Mm-hmm. Well, how did you get from one place to the next and into town, Bill? Did you have an automobile, or did you...
We did finally bought one, a Model T. But before that, all we had was a wagon and team.
How was the conditions of those days in the roads?
They were poor. We've got our Model T. And you know, you had to watch in the wintertime. You get a rain and you get a little rain, and them roads freeze, with the tires we had then, you couldn't get a town back with them.
Well,
they were fabric, see, they weren't, they didn't have this nylon. And those ruts had just cut the sides of them out.
When did most people start getting automobiles around the area? Late teens?
Yeah. Well, I think we was one of the first ones, one of the few that got automobiles. There was a few of them that ranchers had some before.
Bill, did you farm wheat from the very beginning when you homesteaded?
Yeah.
What was the process by which you, I don't believe that you strip farmed or summer followed in that time, did you, Bill?
No, we had, at first, we headed it.
You pardon?
We headed it.
And you
first we that? Done, we come out here, my brother, he brought it in, my brother-in-law, they brought an immigrant car. They put a bunch of that hardwood lumber in it, what machinery they had back there, and they shipped it out here, and they brought a 6-foot binder. And they cut all the wheat around the country here. I think they got $1 an acre or something like that for cutting wheat.
About how much land could you put in wheat, Bill, of your homestead?
Oh, it's according to the kind of land. You take this 160 from here down there, from here down that road down there. Hell, that was all in wheat. It's got a big acreage. Up around my place in Red Bill, I think I've got 200 acres there that's plowed up.
What could you put in wheat, though, when you first farmed yourself? Was only about what? Could you put in as much as 100 acres when you first started?
No.
Wheat?
We didn't have horse enough plowed up, you know.
About how many acres did you put in?
Oh, we was lucky if we got 20 acres on the homestead.
What about the ground to break out? Was it pretty tough to get it plowed out? How was the in those early years, how were the yields as far as wheat? What could you produce on an acre?
Oh, I'll tell you, if you got 10 bushel wheat, you figured you had a pretty good crop. Sometimes 7 and 8 bushel, just according to the way the year is, how dry it was.
Yeah. What were you getting for your wheat about that time?
Oh, I think the first wheat that we thrashed here, I think it was $1 and something an acre we get, a bushel we got for it.
Did you, but now somebody else came in and thrashed it for you, Bill, or did you kind of help each other out?
No, we hardly thrashed. The first crop I think we thrashed here, I think George House thrashed it. That was Ed House's brother. He brought this machine up and down here at Lyman.
Do you recall when you were thrashing? Was it in August or?
It's way late, I know. It's way late.
How did you get your wheat then? What, to Torrington? Did you haul it?
Yeah, wagons till we finally, in about a year or so, we bought that Model T car, and we bought a truck. God, do we haul 40 bushel of wheat from here to Torrington with that? We thought we were getting along pretty good. 40 bushel of wheat was all the old Ford trucks would carry, you see.
Well, about how much money could you make off your wheat crop in those, if you had to estimate about the total amount of money that you
would get? Oh, God, we get very little, $300 is about all we could ever raise.
Would that get you through the year?
Yeah. It was pretty rough. We liked potatoes. They were cheap.
You guys gardened? garden.
Well, you know, the first potatoes we bought when we come out here, we thought that was hell. We had to give $6 a hundred for them.
Where was most of your trading done, Bill?
Well, most of it was done in Torrance.
I think you told me that when you first came to this country, there were hardly any fences around. Were there any fences at all, as a matter of fact?
No. We could go from here to Torrance, I told you, without ever hitting a fence. Then, I'll tell you, in a little while after that, it was rough. I've got you take your old wagon and team and go in there and get your groceries and come back. Some guy had fenced his place. You have to work around that and get down to where he left the road, see.
Well, fencing must have started coming in then in those years. Did most all the homesteaders fence their land as quick as they could get some money?
Actually, when those dry years come, most of those guys just borrowed what they could borrow off their land. Went back east and just forgot about them. That's why a lot of this land has got all into some fellow's hands. They went and bought up them off of the loan company, see.
The land just went into what? Into the loan company?
Yeah.
They went back to the government?
Yeah. No, the government did get them down. The loan companies had to pay the taxes.
What about in the 1920s, Bill, as you were farming then? Were those fairly good years in the 1920s, or were those about as difficult as in the 30s?
No, we got to summer fallowing then. And I'll tell you, we raised some awful good wheat then. I think the best wheat we ever bought cut was right down here. Middle of that place down here, we broke that sod up. And we summer fallowed it, and didn't push the wheat that fall.
Well, how come summer fallow wasn't used earlier? I'm curious here.
Well, the old man Platt told me when I come out here, he's the guy that located us. He says, you can't do that in this country. He said, he'd blow all your land away. It can't be done.
Well, who were some of the first people then to start summer fallowing?
Oh, let's see, Nelson. He was over there west of Ettrick. Then Jerry Motzik. Motzik is up there on the hill now, but Jerry's homestead was down on this side of the hill. He raised 50 bushel wheat up there. I went up and got a load of for seed.
What convinced you, Bill, that you ought to start summer fallowing the land?
I said?
What convinced you yourself that you ought
to? Well, here, we didn't have enough moisture to raise a crop. But when we started this summer fallowing, well, we used 2 years' moisture to raise 1 year's crop.
Did it bother you, though, that only half of your land could be cultivated? In other words, you had to let half of it lay idle. Did that bother a lot of farmers?
Oh, yeah. Well, some of them never did get it in their head.
Now, did the strip farming come at the same time as the summer fallowing?
Yeah.
They both came together. About when
was... Well, you might say Lauren and I started that strip cropping in here. And actually what we were doing, we had our land stripped about 20 rod wide. And Dick Llewellyn, he was working for the government on his soil conservation. And Davis, he was selling cases for Hockenbrink. He come by out here and our ground wasn't blowing and everybody else was blowing. So he went in and told Hockenbrink and Hogenbrink and Dick Llewellyn come out here to see what the hell we'd done. So we told him. So Hogenbrink wanted to know why. He said, couldn't a man just go out there and just make you strip just one drill wide? We told him, well, we'd found out that where your strip was too narrow, your weeds would take the moisture clear across it, see.
Bill, I'm sure that there are probably a lot of things you learned as you went along. What stands out in your mind as the things that you picked up in the first couple of years of homesteading? What did you recall that you really learned, perhaps by experience?
Well, I think the main thing was this way with farms, see, this summer fallow. But I will sometimes wonder if I know as much now as I thought I did. Well, we, Lorne and I, was both pretty much of a moldboard band, see. And I found out since that we were doing the wrong thing. This book, I'm just writing a book there that some guy wrote it. And I believe he was from Pennsylvania or somewhere down there. And he was just telling what a hell of a mistake we ever made to use them moldboards. He said, if you take a disc, take your rod weeder out in this stubble here, tear the weeds out and leave all that stubble right there. And he said, whatever that crop that you raised there on there, that wheat that was in there, it'll put right back in your land just what it took out. He said, if you put it back under that plow sole down there, he said, it don't get it all. And I just wondered if we hadn't made some mistakes there. Gerald here is the first guy that started that chiseling.
This would be your son-in-law?
Yeah. No, it's a guy I rented out.
Oh, I'm sorry. No. Bill, I'm going to have to turn the tape over here, so just a moment. Homesteading. Do you remember that if any of the homesteaders took much of an interest in politics around the country?
No. We always voted, but we didn't care much about that.
What about when you got in the Depression and Roosevelt's New Deal? How did you kind of feel about some of those things?
Well, I felt awful good when he made us some payments. But finally, when he got through, I think that he probably hurt this country worse than any president we ever had.
At the time, you were for him, but since you have
changed
your mind.
After I've seen the way things have gone, I'll tell you why I say that. You know, he was a man that got the people to thinking the government owes them a living. We're supposed to keep the government up, you know, not the government us. You go over to Torrington right here today, you find that there's a lot of people there in Torrington that just don't aim to work. They're sitting there drawing relief.
Bill, were there any big ranchers that you recall when you first started homesteading out here that whose land adjoined yours?
No. About the only cattle that run in here was Frank Gilders. And he only run them here about 1 year, and then he got them out.
Were there any problems between some of the ranchers and some of the homesteaders?
Oh, he had a little trouble. There was a guy who lived down in the corner named Forrest, Ralph Forrest, homesteaded down there. They had a bulldog down there and a bunch of dogs. old Frank had some cattle over there, and that was open in there. They went this in year that's irrigated. They never got the water on that. It was just open range. And they'd see, start them dogs after them cattle. And by God, they run them clear up the road here for a mile or two. And old Frank said, by God, he'd give this section of land. He had a school section over here, flat section. He'd give a man a lease for that. Somebody tell him who was running their dogs on his cattle.
Then the homesteaders get along pretty well themselves, among themselves.
Oh, yes.
Use the term wrinklebillies.
Yeah. Well, all time homesteaders was wrinklebillies.
Did they call themselves that, or
no?
Was that a term that was kind of a derogatory or a bad term that they didn't like to use that?
Yeah.
Who used it then primarily? You've used it here, and I was.
Yeah. Well, all about all the homesteaders, even though you're a wrinkle belly yourself, you'd call the other guys a wrinkle belly. As long as he's a dry homesteader.
Did most of these homesteaders come from any particular state or area?
No, they come from about every place. I tell you, here's a guy up there, all of them come from Minnesota. Then over the other side, we had the old tools down there. They come from Kansas, they're the RHC. And they come from every place in here.
What about the education of children in those years, Bill? Was that a concern of most homesteaders? How are they going to get their kids to school?
Yeah.
What about now, when you came, were you married, Bill, at that time?
Mm-hmm.
Oh. And were you soon married then, as a homesteader?
No, I didn't get married until I was about 35 years old.
So you didn't have to particularly worry then about feeding a bunch of kids, did you?
No.
What about those homesteaders that did have families?
Well, they had to get a school where their kids could go. I just tell my wife now. My brother-in-law, that's the place Lawrence got over there. He had a bunch of kids, and then there was Jeff Lyle over there where Hollis Day lived. Both of them had kids. So they went over to a guy there, Lingle. He was a... He was on the board, see. And he told them the only way he'd give them a school was, if you guys will come and haul the lumber out there and build it, I'll give you a teacher. And that's the way they got their school. And I told my wife here the other day, she was telling me she taught 9 years here, different schools, where they used to set. I told her, I said, that's one thing they failed to do in this country was putting wheels on them schoolhouses. About every other year, you had to move them, see. Your kids move, see.
What about other real concerns of the early homesteaders, Bill, aside from education? Were there any? And of course, I suppose, getting a crop.
Oh, yeah.
Were there any other things that they talked about a good deal? Now, you were a bachelor out here. Were there a lot of other single fellows that were homesteaders?
Yeah, there's quite a few of them.
What did you do for entertainment or fun or on Saturday night?
Well, we'd go to dances.
Were there a lot of dances around the country?
Oh, yes, a lot of.
In the schoolhouses?
Yeah.
Were the schoolhouses generally used for dances and on Saturday night? About how many people would they draw to one of those, I suppose you'd say, country dances?
Oh, we'd go over here to Benson Schoolhouse, and there's usually around 25 of them there, 30.
I suppose that young girls were pretty scarce. I don't imagine that a young girl stayed single very long then around this country, did she?
There's a lot of little school teachers that always went there to the Benson Schoolhouse. A lot of them got married.
Well, most of the single men then, like yourself, most of them were you pretty busy then, or did you ever have any kind of time on your hands, or was it just all work?
Well, it's mostly work. Of course, in the winter time, why, there's nothing you could do then. It just sat around the house.
Did you generally try to pick up some winter work?
Oh, not too much. I went down to the factory there, and then I went down to Cheyenne to the railroad down there and worked a year down there. That was a pretty good job because they were on the strike. Hell, they paid you pretty good wages. They even bored you.
Well, if you had to do it all over again, would you do it again?
No.
Homesteading?
Hell no.
Why? Was it just too rough?
Yes, too goddamn rough.
Well, you survived. Was it really that tough, looking back?
No, I guess not. In fact, I kind of enjoyed it.
Well, there were a lot of people that were forced off of the homestead. Did you find them leaving in the 20s and in the 30s, Bill? A lot of people.
Oh, as long as 30 there, during them droughts, a lot of them just got up and moved out, see.
What about... hailstorms, fires? Did you ever have any prairie fires you had to worry about?
No, I never did. I did have some grass over here burnt up, but it wasn't too much of it.
Were hailstorms frequent? Any more frequent in those years or about the same?
About the same thing. I don't think we ever had but about two good hails through here.
Seems like one of the things that changed this country a lot was when irrigation came in. Do you recall when that was, Bill, and kind of what occurred in some of the changes that it brought?
Well, I'd say about 20. Is when most of the irrigation come in there. That's when they put the government ditch through. And I think we've got more rain since then.
Now, did you ever go over and work on the main ditch when it was coming through?
I never did.
I believe a lot of farmers had worked on it, didn't they, Bill? Did the country fill up quite pretty fast after the ditch was built then?
No, it didn't change much that way. They opened that land up there under the ditch to see to the soldiers. And the only way you'd get a piece of that land would be a soldier, see.
Well, as you look back in those homesteading years, let's say from about 1915 into the 20s, were there any humorous or funny incidents that stand out in your mind?
No, I can't think of anything right.
What about some of the people that were around as homesteaders? Did you have some real characters, so to speak, or some people that were more colorful?
We had a couple of guys in here that worked through this country and stayed here. Hap I said, what the heck was their name? Happen. There was two of them, and there wasn't either one too bright. They went down here in Nebraska. He got married. He thought somebody was fooling around with his wife up there, down there, and he just killed him. I don't know what they ever done.
Oh, was this down in Nebraska?
Yeah. Down here around Lyman in there.
What about, did you have any episodes out here of people kind of taking the law into their own hands in those early years?
No. No.
Did you have any feuds or any fights, so to speak, of?
Oh, I never seen one.
What about any of your other neighbors that you recall as being quite kind of interesting people? Were they more or less kind of just about all the same when it came
it's
to
Horsetown? About the same thing. The old man Platt, he located this year, and he lived, you know, where young Shannon lives over here?
Just a couple miles from you here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Then he had a son-in-law and a stepson that homesteaded over there. They went to Washington.
When were the biggest changes in farming? When do you think they came in this country? In the 30s?
Yes. When they started that summer fallowing, that's when it really started. Before that, man, I'm telling you, it was rough.
Now, Bill, you mentioned you got married when you were, what, 35? And how many children then?
Just two.
Two children.
Two girls.
And you've been really on this farm here about how many years, Bill?
58, isn't it? 58 years.
Well, I want to mention that also joining us tonight is Mrs. Likens here. And Mrs. Likens, is there anything that you'd like to add to your husband's remarks here this evening?
I think he just told me about it.
Well, Bill, I want to thank you.
You could have told him how you got out here.
Did you come about that time too, Miss Lighton?
She came early.
Oh. We came in 28.
In 1920.
Well, we came to Wyoming in 1908.
Oh, you came to Wyoming in 1908. Did you come to Goshen?
To Goshen County.
Well, then you preceded your husband then here.
That's right. We came up to Torrington, south of 24 miles. And just right over the hill, you know, from that supper club.
From present day Valley High Supper Club that's on the top of the hill.
Yeah. About a mile and a half over the hill from there.
What about your recollections? Were they pretty much the same as Bill's about the countryside and early years of homesteading?
Well, see, my folks took out, they homesteaded, see. And I was just a little girl when we came here. I had a brother older than I was, and a sister younger. The three of us kids, and we came by covered wagon from Cozad, Nebraska. And I do know that we had to be very careful with everything because we were homesteaders. And my folks never let me forget at any time that I was a homesteader. And they knew that there would be one of us kids that would be the last one of the three, and I'm the last one of the three or the five of us. So
in other words, you even in those years, you had to realize that you were a homesteader, and you were a little different then, is that
yes,
correct?
Yes, we were a little different than other kids, than most other kids. You know.
I don't know where you know her Knight, the last man there in town, where he owns a house over just over the hill, Porge Huntley?
No, I'm not sure I do, Bill.
That was her dad, a homestead. That was his homestead, and he built that house.
Mm-hmm. Her Johnny Bright, you know, that man owns the paint shop.
There, yes.
And rug and paint. Well, he owns that place now.
Do you recall your journey out here by covered wagon?
There's a few things I remember, like when we stopped someplace or something like that.
But you said it took you 3 years a day to come up here, didn't it?
It took us 2 weeks to come up from Cozad, Nebraska.
And how old were you, Mrs. Likens?
I was 2 and a half.
You were 2 and a half at the mm-hmm. time in your parents.
And I remember, if I don't remember, my mother instilled that in my mind so much that she wanted us kids to remember that we were homesteaders. My dad and mother both came from Pennsylvania originally. And they were engaged, and they came to Cozad and got married and were down there about four years. And then they came on up to Wyoming to homestead.
How did your father get along homesteading then, Mrs. Likens?
Well, he did just about like Bill said he did. He got a job on the outside, other than the homestead. You know, any of the people that need farming down there, or building, or plowing, or anything like that, he would do it by the day, you know, work for the day.
And what was your maiden name now?
My name was Florence Camel.
Camel?
Yes. And my folks, I might as well say it here, my folks
came from Pennsylvania too, but they were a long way around. My grandfather's homestead right where Philadelphia is, right in the heart of Philadelphia.
Yes, Miss Likens?
My father's name was Albert Campbell. And, you know, they bought a relinquishment. They didn't start from it, but they bought a relinquishment and used that, which was just as good as the other, you know, as filing on a homestead.
Well, I want to thank both of you, Bill Likens and Mrs. Likens, for visiting with me this evening and providing a closer look then at homesteading and the early years of homesteading then in this area around Yoder. Mm-hmm.